next stop, the Super Bowl. Hell yeah, you know we on. We built to do this all night long. Who that say they gon' beat them Saints? They a lie. They can try, but in the dome we know they ain't.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Who dat, and welcome back to Canal Street Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brendan Ertl. Today, I'm here with my co-host, Chris. We're going to be talking about Falcons Hate Week and all the good stuff that comes with it. But before we get into this, Chris, do you celebrate Falcons Hate Week? And if you do, how do you celebrate?
Man, you know, I think that it's a religious experience. Like you can't be a Saints fan and not celebrate Falcons Hate Week. So, you know, for me, I normally started off by watching the game in 06, you know, the Gleason punt game, you know, watch me a couple double reverses, you know, go through some highlights, a Drew Brees spin or two, you know, and then Sunday, man, it's time to eat a bird, man. So, I mean, you know, just in case the Saints don't come through and destroy the Falcons, you know, I get me the biggest, you know, turkey that I can fucking find. And, you know, we gonna feast one way or another, because I don't know if you can buy a Falcon in store. And yeah, that's how I celebrate it.
Well, the Falcons posted something on their Twitter about Drew Brees throwing the interception to Debo way back when. It's like so long ago. And the Saints counter with a good 5 to 10 minute highlight of just all the good things that's happened. So it's like they got nothing on us. And especially recently, the Saints have had the Falcons number just all over, whether it be on Thanksgiving or Cam Jordan all of a sudden becoming like the best DN in the league against this team. So we'll get in that in just a second. We have some chores to get over and something I don't want to talk about, but we have to. Haven't addressed it on this podcast yet, but Michael Thomas is out for the year, and
yeah,
it sucks. It really sucks ass. I mean, I'm gonna be honest, I have a Michael Thomas poster right behind me, my favorite player, but I'm just gonna be unbiased from here on out. It sucks. I was really expecting him to return this week at some point, but if you really listen closely, it didn't really sound all that good. And as a New Orleans fan in general, it's just frustrating because we have Michael Thomas, Zion Williamson, foot injuries, and a lot of question there. So it just sucks. And moving forward, what do you do? I mean, I am going to be completely unbiased. I've seen lots of things like, let's trade Michael Thomas and whatnot. I wouldn't go that far because he's still the best wide receiver. Maybe not right now, but look, 2 years ago, he had the most receptions ever. I don't trade him. If a team calls and offers their whole freaking draft, I mean, go for it. But I'm not going to be actively shopping Michael Thomas. If you can pair him with a really good guy, I mean, we'll talk about it in a second. If you compare him with someone else next year, if you're trying to go after Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, maybe you do try to trade him to get some picks, but I'm not going to trade him just because he got hurt 2 years. I mean, it's unlucky. And the play he got hurt on was when they had an 11-point lead in the Bucks, and you just get rolled up on. It's not like they were trying to run up the score. They were trying to run the clock out. So really a freak injury, but Michael Thomas out for the year.
Well, look, man, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate. As you mentioned, we all were just, you know, you were just waiting with, and it's all compiled. I mean, it's another situation of just bad luck, bad timing, right? And this is before Jameis gets hurt, you're just waiting for this receiving corps to finally get healthy. and add their biggest chess piece. You know, the one guy that can handle his own and gets elite cornerbacks and, you know, press man and off man, like zone. I mean, he has it all, almost every route in the tree. And you got a chance to, you know, to more than likely see him as close to 100% healthy as he would be around this time. And yeah, man, it's really unfortunate because, you know, that's a loss that, you know, this offense, while they've been able to, you know, to get throughout the year, I think as the season progresses and if they have any true deep playoff aspirations, you know, they're going to miss at some point, right? But as always, you know, it's next man up. They're going to have to find a way to move forward and get contributions in other areas. Look, in regards to the trade talk, man, I mean, the organization has a tendency that if they make trades like this, especially with position players, you know, they do it 9 times out of 10 when a player's value is high, or they already draft their replacement. And I just don't see at this point Sean, you know, using a high draft pick on a receiver. I don't see Mickey and Jeff really doing that with the success that they've had, finding guys that they like undrafted and at the bottom of drafts. Brandon Cooks didn't work out. You had to end up trading him. Some parts of the Michael Thomas relationship has been rocky. His value isn't at his highest, and it's not like you're going to get a bunch back for a guy that, I mean, let's be honest, hasn't been at his peak due to injury in a couple years now, right? So, you know, I'd say you'd be better off going the, you know, keeping Thomas and doing what the Saints have been trying to do as of recent time and what New England has done so well, get talented players that, you know, to add to your team that have something to prove, even if they're a veteran and their value is a little bit murky, which is why you're talking about pairing him with someone like an Odell Beckham Jr. or somewhat. Or if you go, you know, Brandon Cooks, that's what the Saints should probably end up doing. And I mean, it's unfortunate because, again, if Jameis Winston doesn't get hurt, maybe they pay close to what Cleveland wants, or they do enough to where a deal is completed and maybe we're having a different discussion right now.
Yeah, that's what sucks is we were kind of offensively waiting for Michael Thomas to get back, and Jameis, I thought, was doing a great job of just managing, and it was, let's just get by till Michael Thomas gets back at some point. And obviously we won't get either of those guys with Jameis and Michael out for the year. So, I mean, going forward, that puts Jameis's next stint with the Saints in total question. It's like, did he do enough to get a big contract or just a decent contract? Because I know they're going to be shooting for the stars come this offseason. So really sucks that he got hurt. And we haven't really seen him in 2 years. And the only 2 years we've seen from him is him just trying to fight through an injury, punching CJ in the face, just all these things that don't build a good relationship, especially with the media. So won't see him for till next year, which really, really sucks. But that adds the question, the trade deadline, which was Tuesday. We're past that, and the Saints did not add a wide receiver. So the question is, why didn't they? So Nick Underhill was reporting that they did reach out to the Browns for Odell, and they did speak to the Giants for Darius Slayton. Obviously, they didn't get either of those. And I could tell Saints fans are like, it's another offseason where it's like, we didn't get someone we were rumored to get. This might be a little different of an offseason just because the circumstances are happening. But do you think, I mean, this is a really hypothetical question, do you think the Saints maybe were a little stingy on their picks because maybe this year they think we need our picks to go get a franchise quarterback, or are they just, you know, the Saints always play by their price kind of thing?
Well, I think it's two sides to this spectrum here. I think the first part is what you mentioned, that they're going to try to save as many assets as they have to go and get a quarterback next year, more than likely, because you still have a team that's going to be in place, I think, with the right, you know, quarterback in play to have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl next year. I mean, it's crazy how long this window has been able to stay open, right? But I think that they proved this year and with some of the other moves that they made and what Mickey's been able to do and some of the players that they've drafted that are kind of sitting in the wings or they have going to have a chance to develop and maybe step into bigger roles next season. They'll have flexibility to move some players if they have to, picks, so on and so forth, and still be a really competitive team and maybe over the top once they add an elite quarterback. And I think that's the role that they would end up going. So that's one part of it. And whether that's Aaron Rodgers or whether that's Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, I mean, whatever route that is, I do think that plays into part of this. But I think the other side of it is either A, they knew that Michael Thomas was going to be out for the year, and you really considering Jameis was out for the year, and you don't know 100% what you're going to get out of the quarterbacks that you use, whether it's Taysom or Trevor Siemian or both of them, you know, do you trade a high pick for one receiver, a skill position that's going to have to take some time to learn the offense and find some comfortable. If you're unsure what you're having at quarterback, if you think you're only going to get average to below average, some games of, you know, above average play, does it make sense to trade for a big name, give up something that can be used for next season for, you know, a situation that, you know, does Odell put them over the top? I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. I mean, we don't know yet what this team is. We're going to have to see this next step, these next few weeks, depending on, you know, how they play with these new guys, you know, set up. So it's just tough, especially if you don't know that a move like that, if you make a move like that, it's going to put you over the top. If it's going to make you feel very comfortable about being a Super Bowl contender, then why not just wait until the offseason when the price will probably drop, or wait until maybe a few days when Odell is cut, and then go sign him at a, you know, without having to, you know, sacrifice draft picks or players or anything like that. So it's a weird spot. I think if Jameis was healthy, maybe they make the move because of what he's done, missing so many guys. The offensive line's gotten healthy. Your defense has been amazing. Maybe you think at that point, okay, now we're a team that can maybe win a Super Bowl or compete with the best teams in the conference. We don't know if they're going to be able to do that with what they have now. You know, if this would happen week four, maybe we'll have a different discussion. But right at the trade deadline, it just makes it way too complicated to make such a move like that, depending on what Cleveland was asking for, a second or third round pick. Or it just, you know, you wait it out and hopefully you can get it done with the guys you have, or maybe Cleveland cuts.
Yeah, absolutely. And the timing when Jameis got hurt, you're right. It's such a punch to the gut, because it was like, okay, now you got Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill. Will they win a Super Bowl with either of those guys? I mean, probably not. I mean, they're a brink wildcard team that could potentially take you to the divisional round if having a good game or whatnot. But you look at old Super Bowl quarterbacks. I mean, even Joe Flacco was a quality starter. It's not like Trevor Siemian's ever taken anyone to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's just not realistic, and it sucks because it feels like this team's got a ton of freaking talent. And I think you don't tank. I mean, don't do any of that. But like you said, save your draft picks, maybe save your money for next year, and just see how far I can get with this team. But yeah, let's talk about Odell. And if they do want to get better at receiver, I mean, they still can. I mean, this is a really, really odd situation. Deshaun Jackson just cleared waivers, so he's a free agent. So at worst, you can look at a guy like that who definitely won't hurt your offense, and for this offense especially. But Odell, these rumors are insane, and it feels like it's kind of surreal a little bit, because all Saints fans love Odell, the hometown legend. So let's talk about that a little bit. And the situation there in Cleveland, I don't cover the Browns or anything, and I don't know anyone who does, but I have a friend who's really close to them, and the situation is not great, and it's looking like it's going to come to an end. That relationship is so far gone that I would be surprised if he ever plays it down for them again. And we've seen Browns supporters say it's likely he never plays for us again. His coach told him to go home. And Odell's locked in. Obviously, his dad posted a highlight tape of Baker Mayfield missing him. So it's just a disaster there. So if he were to be cut, because it's after the trade deadline, he would be put on waivers, which the Saints cannot claim him on waivers, because that would keep his current contract, which is like $8 million this year, 10 next year, and then like 15. And they just don't have that. The Saints barely have $1 million in cap space. So Deshaun cleared waivers with a $2 million cap hit. And that just shows you teams know that no one's going to claim him. So if Odell was cut, I'm sure he would clear waivers. And I think the Saints would be the top of his list, not necessarily just because he's from there, whatnot. I think it's just because he hasn't been used correctly in a really, really long time. And it's felt like that. And Cleveland's using him as kind of a flanker receiver. He's got speed, but he doesn't like that. He likes to have the ball in his hands. He likes to have 5-10 receptions a game. Throw him a screen pass, see what he can do, because he's really a game changer with the ball in his hands. And you know, Sean Payton, whether it's Trevor Siemian or Taysom Hill, that he will get him the ball. It does not matter. And I know we don't have Tom Brady, but Baker Mayfield wasn't even hitting him. So it's like, if we had Jameis here, it would have been a completely different story. I felt like that could have put Jameis over the edge, but you add a guy like Odell, he hasn't even been cut yet. I'm just assuming it's a real shot. If he gets cut, that he could come here. I mean, look at the other places, maybe the Raiders have been mentioned. Jordan Schultz says the top two teams are interested are the Saints and the Raiders. If you're Odell, what team do you pick? I mean, Trevor Siemian, not looking great for this year, but maybe you sign a 2-3 year deal and stay here for a little bit. And John's like, hey, I mean, we'll get you the ball. We'll revive your career. And we're going to try and turn this thing around next year as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think for Odell right now, it's about fit. You know, he's had to humble himself a lot since going to Cleveland. He watched the team in his first year struggle, lose a lot of close games, some frustration, but for the most part, kept it together. Couldn't build that chemistry with Baker. And then last year, complete opposite happened. You know, Cleveland, they win a few games, lose a few games, but they start to get hot once he's injured, right? But before he got hurt, he was playing pretty well. You know, they were finding him in the ways that, you know, that you're supposed to. They ran reverses, let him throw the ball. He ran the ball, and he, you know, they threw screens, slants, intermediate plays, and it was working for them. But he goes out, they simplify things a little bit more, and, you know, they end up making the playoffs, and people think, oh, man, well, you know, you add Odell to that next year, and it's going to work. Well, no matter if he was playing or not, it just hasn't worked for Cleveland this year. But at the end of the day, if it's anyone that knows how to deal with talented people, with egos, with
you're trying, you know, not to say different, diva. I know you're not.
Yeah. Different kind of personality types. It's Sean. They've seen it all. We see it every locker room, in the locker room after every game. It's a mixture of them. But the good part about New Orleans is that they have so many veteran leaders that are just there, right? That to where when you walk through those doors, like the Saints have become one of those places to where you just walk in a building and there's a level of respect that you're showing to people just because you know what you're walking into. They've established themselves. Odell, I mean, there was a tweet earlier in which when Emmanuel Sanders signed with New Orleans, he was one of the first people to comment like, yo, man, this, you know, Sean and Drew been running, you know, the best system, you know, in the game right now. You don't think he wants to be a part of that? Now, he would have to think long term, you know, and I think that's something that they would tell him. But if he wants to play football, you know, he gets to be back in front of, in front of a bunch of people that loved him from college, his home, and in a situation where he could be playing some important games down the stretch. He's going to be, make no mistake about it. If you think he's lost a step or not, he's number one in New Orleans the minute he walks in. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think that Sean has gotten to a point to where he's realized how to use guys. He's realized how to make the most out of whatever someone can do. That player just has to buy in and be happy with it. It didn't work for a guy like Adrian Peterson, right? Because Adrian had never really been a part of a three-back stable, right? Or sharing. He's a guy that was used to something different. And you compound losing with that, and it makes it 10 times worse. That's the thing with wide receivers like that. No matter who you point at, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss, whatever, it's not just that they want the football. They want to win too. And if they don't win and they're not getting the football, well, it's going to be a problem because they're going to think, well, damn, if I would have got the football, maybe we would have won, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's really what it comes down to. The Saints have had situations where no one's gotten the football this year and they win the game. So different story here, man.
Yeah, it's a really good problem to have. And I think if Odell was here, I mean, he still has to be cut. He would become the automatic one. I mean, there's not even a question about it. And it would take so much pressure off everyone. And I really been impressed. I mean, we'll talk about it in a second. depending on who the next quarterback is, it could be different how they use him. But Trevor Siemian, I was really impressed with his short game, and that's kind of something that he hasn't been used a bunch about. But he wasn't – I mean, look at Cleveland's schedule. They're not on pace to make the playoffs. They're a loss away from becoming the last in the division. It's not like – I mean, they had Super Bowl hopes this year. It's not like they got a ton going for them. So we'll just see about that. I don't want to get too far into that because, I mean – I say he gets cut, and next thing you know, they repair the relationship, and he's back. So I'll just let that situation play out. But let's talk about this football game and this injury report. I think this was the best news of the week because it was a really, really hard-fought game, and I was getting really nervous. Like, oh, gosh, who's going to be in the injury report this week that got banged up this week? But it's actually pretty good. For today, Thursday, that is, the two players that did not practice are Carl Granderson and Ty Montgomery. So Two nice role player guys, but nothing insane. And eliminated was Malcolm Jenkins. Peyton Turner practiced again, and Teron Armstead was a little banged up. He practiced as well. And the main news is Taysom Hill was full, and Dwayne Washington was full. So they actually found a way to get healthier after this week, which blows my mind because after games like that, you never really know. So they're getting healthier, and they're facing a Falcons team that, I mean, is bad. Let's be honest. I mean, there's not a ton of offensive weapons. The defense is in shambles. Arthur Smith's already on the hot seat, and he just got here. So going into this game, this is the Saints' first game in the Dome back-to-back. So you know they're going to want to bring the juice. And the main thing I want to highlight is Mark Ingram is 62 yards away from breaking the rushing record. So they want to do it in the Dome. I think they try to make that happen. But I think – for the Saints, it's going to be so hard for me to make a guess at quarterback, but my instinct tells me Taysom Hill, but I also think Trevor Siemian. But I'll pass it to you. Who do you think that start? Who gets the start? And yeah, I mean, it's really hard.
Based on what I know, and based on what Sean, I'm reading through the lines of what Sean said, and I remember two comments that were made after the game. And the first one is he's talking about Trevor and he's saying certain guys need a game plan to really make the best out of the situation. And some guys can be called cold and will come in and play really well. He said, Trevor's one of those guys. We feel comfortable with that, playing him on the fly. Now, it's clear that Taysom's going to be a big part of the game. But the other comment is that someone asked him, like, basically, if Jameis would have got hurt and Taysom was healthy, would Trevor still have played? And he said, yeah, right? And that's not the first time we've seen that. We saw that back with Teddy, right? He said, because Taysom was going to have, a utility role in the game plan. We wouldn't have wanted to change that. I think that, but then he said, next week Taysom would have been a starter. That kind of tells me, or that speaks to me, that if Taysom's healthy, he's going to be the starting quarterback. There's still part of Sean, I think, that wants to give Taysom everything that they've tried to put together for each other, right? What Taysom has wanted, and what Sean has hoped he's been able to give him. We know Taysom's limitations. But he was able to win some games for them last year and surprise people with certain ways he was able to throw the football. There's a scenario available where Siemian starts and Taysom is running running his packages. But another reason I think that Taysom's probably a starter, because if something happens to Siemian, well, you're going from Siemian to Book.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Right, you're going from Siemian to Book, and that at that point, that's all hell breaking loose, right? You don't want to put that pressure on a rookie like that, no matter how high or smart you are on him. Versus if you start Taysom and Taysom goes out, and you've already seen Siemian enough to be able to trust in that situation. So many parts of that spot just screams to me that Taysom's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I literally was going to say the same thing, because if people don't really understand, when Taysom is in that Joker role, he's in team meetings with other positions. So he's missing out on like really important meetings with the quarterback. So he wouldn't be prepared, and he definitely want to put a quarterback out there that's not prepared. And we saw last week, I mean, the Bucks are going after Simeon, and it only takes one ankle sprain to get Ian Book, a rookie, who probably isn't ready, just on the field, and Taysom would be in that Joker role. And the other thing is, the Joker role has got Taysom really banged up. And even in college, every single year, he was having a season-ending injury. And since he's made it to the NFL, he's been luckier with his injuries. So this has been kind of like the first main injury we've had. But we go back and look at Taysom last year. And those first three games, I want to say, two against the Falcons and then one in Denver, where whatever, I mean, it was a disaster for them. He played pretty good. I mean, he went 3-0 and he did everything you wanted him to do. But then you look at that Philadelphia game. If Drew comes back a week early, I mean, we're looking at Taysom a whole lot different. We're saying like, yeah, he played pretty freaking well and destroyed the Falcons twice and did the job against the Broncos. So, I mean, we're looking at a whole different situation. And in Philadelphia, just the whole team just did not show up to that game. So I think you do go Taysom. I think he brings more to the offense in terms of his running. And I think if he wants to be the guy for the rest of the year, he needs to start using his legs. I mean, I remember that was the thing last year. It's like, he's trying to be someone he's not. I mean, if nothing's there, take off. Don't take a sack. And all of a sudden, ball security was a big thing for him. His hand size, we were bringing up. I didn't even know about he had small hands out of nowhere. It's because he's not used to getting hit like that. Taysom is best when he escapes the pocket and he is one-on-one with DBs and wide receivers or DBs and linebackers, and he can just destroy them. So I love to see him in that role. And a full week of Sean Payton scheming up this offense for Taysom, I think that'll be really successful. But he's not going to say till Sunday because the Falcons are going to have to prepare for both. And that just wastes time for them. But talking about preparing offensively for the Falcons, two guys I want to talk about is Cordarrelle Patterson and Kyle Pitts. How do you stop those guys? And with Malcolm Jenkins a little banged up, who do you put on Kyle Pitts?
I can't foresee Dennis Allen going Bill Belichick and putting, you know, I remember how if they were playing, if the Patriots were playing, well, I'm mixing this up. Rob Ryan, that's not it either. Rex Ryan, there we go. When the Patriots and the Jets would play, there was a period of time when Revis was at his peak where they would put Revis on Gronk, right? This is like post Randy Moss. And that would be the matchup that they would use, and just they would, you know, trust that they could hold their own with the Edelmans and everyone else. Well, I could see a similar situation, because if you shut down Kyle Pitts, I mean, there's nothing there. But I mean, unless you're worried about Gage, who I think was also questionable on the report for them, we know Cordarrelle is going to be very important. But one thing I'm interested with is that the way that Atlanta has been using Cordarrelle, they'll line him up, and when he's out of the backfield, he's a threat on swing passes and circle routes, angle routes. I mean, between him and Pitts, you're looking at spots where you can control the middle of the field if you are Atlanta and you find matchups that you like. I think that you also could bracket Pitts, even in the center of the field, have a safety, and you know, whether it be Marcus or you know, PJ, if they're all your deep safeties and you're coming out like, you know, with three safeties on the field and a big nickel, and Malcolm is, well, sometimes with him it's four considering what Chauncey's at. But I really don't know. I think you keep everyone where they're at, and you know, you just, you're putting your focus on those guys. You're making sure that whether it be Warner or whether it be Quan, they're keeping their eyes on Cordarrelle if he's coming out of the backfield. And if not, Cordarrelle's in a slot. Chauncey is, you know, I like my eyes with Chauncey against Cordarrelle than I do maybe a shorter, quicker type of receiver, that type of spot. But in Pitts, I think you have to be physical with him at the line and make sure that your safety over the top, whether it's Marcus, whether it's Malcolm, whether it's PJ, are keeping their eyes on him as he's getting up the field, because you know he's going to be a big part of what they want to do. I went back and forth if it made sense to put Marshawn on Pitts, but I do believe enough in Atlanta and Matt Ryan to find ways to still move the football. But I don't know if I'm scared, if I'm worried enough, or if I feel like the situation where I want to move Marshawn out of his comfort zone and, you know, put him inside and take away snaps or take away situations from other folks, unless Atlanta's going to turn him into an X receiver, you know, so.
Yeah, I completely agree. I forget the exact quote, but Cam Jordan, when explaining Kyle Pitts, he said he's got a lot of mass, but no ass. Kyle Pitts is a wide receiver, in my opinion. You treat him as a wide receiver, you treat him as a giant wide receiver. It's not like he's a Gronk where he's super big and going to go on three tech and block you as a D end.
Yeah.
He's not like that. He's going to be staying up and he's going to be treated as wide receiver. So I think you treat him as that. I don't think you have anyone fall him necessarily. In years past, in preparing for this game, the Atlanta game, you got to worry about Julio. You got to worry about Calvin Ridley. I mean, they don't have either of those guys. So the next up is Russell Gage. And he's had his success against us, but that's being wide receiver three. So I think you put Marshawn and whoever you want, basically. And what they did last game with Marshawn and Mike Evans was, if Mike Evans isn't on Marshawn, he wouldn't fall him. They would just bracket coverage him and kind of double him in a way. So if you don't feel safe, maybe Chauncey one-on-one, just put DeMario right there as well. Just bracket him and make it a challenge for them to throw to Kyle Pitts. Because you look at the rest of the field, there's not a ton of weapons for them. Cordell Patterson obviously is a player that can do something out of nothing. But receiving-wise, I don't think Russell Gage can just beat you man-on-man with Marshawn Lattimore especially. Matt Ryan has had his struggles. I have him on my fantasy team. I don't know why. He's not been good for me. So I don't know why I picked him up in the first place. But, I mean, that brings up the next question. Obviously, the Falcons scored 13 points last week against the Carolina Panthers, and they did not look good. I was watching the game. They did not look good.
Yeah.
For the Saints, the motto here on out is, can they score more than 20, 25 points and outscore their opponent? Because the defense, you know, is going to show up every single week, and the one week it doesn't, like the Giants game, is they lost, they just couldn't keep up offensively. Yeah. So can the offense stay stratosphere with the Atlanta offense? I think they can, especially being at home. Sean Payton will always find a way to score. He found a way to score 26 points out of nowhere with Trevor Siemian against the Atlanta defense. So, or against the Bucs defense. So, and the Atlanta defense, it's a mess. I think it's a strength that the Saints, if they wanted to run, like they did against the Buffalo Bills a few years ago in Buffalo and just run it every single time, I think they could have success. I mean, honestly, you got Mark Ingram again, and he didn't really have much of a role last week, probably just because he got there midweek and had to catch him up in a few things. So I expect to see a big dose of Mark Ingram and definitely trying to give him that record this week. But you'll see 3-4 powers, Taysom Powers, over and over again, and maybe even more than that. So we'll just have to see what the receiving game looks like, but I don't know if it'll have that big of an impact. I expect to see like a 100 to 150 yard game for Taysom or something like that. It's just kind of how he played last year. And I mean, it worked. If the defense can limit Matt Ryan in the offense, I don't think they'll have any problem winning this game and winning the next game against them. So unless something really bad happens on defense.
Yeah.
I think you'll be fine with Pitts. And something else I wanted to add was, I would not put Malcolm Jenkins on Pitts. I've seen this a few times. I think he's a really good matchup for like a Gronk or maybe like someone bigger.
Heavier tight ends.
Yeah, heavier tight ends. Because you look at last year against the Raiders, I mean, Darren Waller just had a field day, and he was a big reason why they won. And I don't think it's a good matchup for Malcolm just because Kyle Pitts is a freaking wide receiver. So Sunday will be really interesting. Crazy things always happen in this matchup. But, yeah, it's Falcons Hate Weekend. I'm enjoying it. Anything you want to add before we head out?
No, man. I look forward to – I mean, I agree with everything that you said, man. I think that considering the Falcons haven't been really good against the run this year, I think it would be a perfect time for the Saints to – unleash Mark and, you know, and Alvin and Taysom. It's just, if Taysom's a starter, it just adds too much for a team to have to game plan against, especially if you're on the other side of the football and you're playing a defense that's getting healthier. that's will be arguably at its healthiest, I think, that we've seen all year now. I mean, mm-hmm. that, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, man, I really look forward to some of the things the Saints can throw at Atlanta. And some cases I'd be worried about a letdown, but after such a big emotional win, but not in the case where you had tragedy and crisis strike during the win and you've had to kind of figure it out afterwards. So I think the guys will be focused and they'll come out with a win.
Yeah, this might be the first week that we have Peyton Turner, Davenport, and Cam Jordan play for the first time all year. So yeah. That's exciting in itself. But we'll come at you guys after this game versus Atlanta. We have the breakdown, and hopefully it's a nicely joined game. We can talk about Mark Ingram getting his nice name in the stands for all-time leading rusher after this game. All right, guys, we appreciate you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch you guys next episode. Who dat?
Let's go.